The groundhog emerges each year everlasting, out from his burrow, predicting, forecasting. We must honor his foresight, though not scientific. No shadow, early spring. Hey, that's terrific. Yeah, well, this is Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross, highlining my way. I'm on a bobsled this week. Into your day with news, views, and personalities engaged in the abundant arts, culture, and humanities in West Wisconsin. Look it up, highlining. This week, it's show number 600 for me, and I invite you to learn about our history and get an opinion on our future as we coax Dean Collin back out of retirement for a chat. We'll tell you how to enter your fiction and or poetry in the Wisconsin People and Ideas Writing Contest. We'll tap the schedules of two guests who help steer the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. So many things to see and do. And let's launch my 600th episode with another experienced entity. After 60 years of entertaining people, many of your systems are proven, so ramping up for a new season feels natural. But the Red Barn Theater and Hardscrabble Players in Rice Lake have adjusted just as everyone has these last bumpy couple of years, though in fine fashion they use the downtime to spruce up and prepare for better days. Well, better days have arrived. They're on the brink of season 61, and we called Connie Olson to hear all about it. All the organizing is over, and it's time for the rubber to meet the road, as they say. You guys are very good at planning ahead. You're holding auditions this Saturday for productions that literally don't begin until June. You like to get things in order early. Are these auditions for all five shows in the season, or will you hold subsequent auditions as each production gets closer?
We will be having all the auditions on Saturday the 5th. The auditions begin at 9 a.m. at the UW-Eau Claire-Barron County Fine Arts Building in Rice Lake. At 9 o'clock, the auditions will be for what we call the straight plays. The auditions for the musicals run from 10 o'clock until noon. The other auditions are 9 o'clock until 1 o'clock. We get our directors and our actors lined up early so people can plan their summers. And it's also an advantage for the directors to communicate who is interested in which actor. And it just makes sense to communicate early and get it lined up.
That's an interesting way of auditioning. That turns out to be a big day. How do you choreograph that? You have all the directors sitting at a table and the straight dramatic or comedy pieces, those directors sit and audition people, what, individually or as a group? And then the musical people get together and they just want to hear people sing and dance and whatever else they do, huh?
Correct. Generally speaking, in one room, tends to be the band room at the campus, mm-hmm. directors of the straight plays will have already prepared short scenes from their particular play. People who are auditioning, they'll just assign them and say, will you take the part of Rose? John, will you take the part of Ben? And so forth. They'll do a scene, then they'll switch some other characters around depending upon who else is in their auditioning. So they just can see people, how they look, they can hear how they sound. And after that scene, perhaps one of the other directors will say, we're going to listen to a scene from halfway there. I need so-and-so to take the part of Violet, and I need so-and-so to take this. So they work together during this time. It's an open audition. You do your audition, and then you can leave. So you do not have to stay the whole time. The way we have it lined up is they will fill out a information sheet, which tells what plays they are interested in. Then they have their picture taken. That is then taken in and handed to one of the directors. When they have that pile of sheets, that's when they'll say, okay, Connie Olson, would you step forward? Bob Rogers, will you step forward? We'd like to run this scene. It's very informal, and I think many people are comfortable with it. And that's what we want, to make it comfortable and also to make it illuminating for the directors so they can make good choices.
You guys know what you're doing. It's a busy day, though. I mean, getting all that done in about 4 hours' time, that's impressive.
We're always thrilled with new faces and happy to see old faces.
61 seasons. That's how experienced they are. So all you actors and singers and dancers out there, this is your time to gather up all your talent and lay it on the line for a place in one or several Red Barn Theater productions. Let's do the audition details one more time, Connie, and then we'll do it at the end again, because it's an important reminder. Saturday in the Fine Arts Building at UW-Eau Claire, Barron County. The hours again are what?
For the straight plays, which would be comedies or dramas, 9 o'clock until 1 o'clock. And those who are interested in the musicals, those auditions are from 10 o'clock until noon, Saturday, February 5th.
This Saturday. We're on the phone with Connie Olson. She's representing the Red Barn Theater and the Hardscrabble Players in Rice Lake, getting ready for their 61st season. As we have just mentioned, they have their auditions coming up this Saturday. Now, the 5 shows in your new season, and the Red Barn really doesn't let any dust settle. I know that we've talked about this during the summer. You guys are literally working on the next show as the previous one closes. What's coming up?
From June 1st until June 11th. The first show is called Above Board. This is a comedy, and it's a collaboration between Peter Bladel and Emily Kimball. They actually are on the faculty at Bethany Lutheran College in Mankato. And this is a relatively new play. We like to have the classics, but we also like to present fresh plays. It's got 3 females and 3 males anywhere between 20s and the 50s. There's a little bit of a mystery in one person's apartment because some of his food is disappearing. The comedy surrounds that. The next show is Halfway There. That's a comedy, June 22nd through July 2nd, written by Norm Foster, probably one of the best known playwrights in Canada. That takes place in a little cafe. Several friends gather and gossip every day, and there's a new doctor that comes to town, and he's interested in one of them. Released 2021, so another new one. Our third show is Company, the musical, which is also being presented on Broadway again. Music by Stephen Sondheim, and the book is by George Firth. A story about a single gentleman on his 35th birthday. It's a series of vignettes. Our fourth show is Bus Stop, which is also a comedy that runs from August 3rd through August 13th, making its third return to the Red Barn. First done in 1985, then again in 1998. It's got interesting characters in it. It takes place, again, at a cafe where people are stranded during the snowstorm. The interrelations between passengers and waitresses in the cafe. Nominated for 4 Tonys back in the day when it came out in 1955. And our final show, Don't Hug Me, We're Married. This is by Phil and Paul Olson. They have done a series of the Don't Hug Me plays, and this one happens to be the 5th in the series. The Red Barn has done 3 of them previously. The cast is returning, except for the 2 female characters. The male characters are already cast. They are returning. Once again, we never have performances on Sunday nights. All of our plays begin after Memorial Day and end before Labor Day.
The comment that I made about shows overlapping, how do you guys do that mechanically? You have one show on and one show rehearsing almost at all times?
Correct. Of course, we're the Red Barn, and we have a building built some years ago, which we call the Red Shed. That's where we have our costume shop, and we keep our extra flats and props. But we also have an area designated. It's marked off on the floor with the same dimensions as our stage. And that is where the rehearsals take place. And as soon as a show closes, when the set is struck, the next day, people are on stage and the set is being constructed or put up for the next show. There's not a lot of turnaround. Now, in many cases, rehearsals can very well start before the Red Shed. Those might take place at the Rice Lake Library in one of their downstairs rooms. It might take place at the director's house. People are given scripts early. They work on them very hard.
Energetic, very energetic. How about behind-the-scenes people? What's their path to involvement? Do you need them, too?
Oh, absolutely. We are powerless without them. We have a house manager hired for the summer, and that person often does the lighting. We also hire people to create the sets. In some cases, the director will request that there is a stage manager for that particular play, and that's usually someone they find who will help perhaps with changing the set between the scenes or help with props. It just depends on the show. Most of the time, our actors step up and be responsible for their own props and getting them ready to go. So everyone works hard, knows what to do, and they do their part.
Well, if you find your own stuff and you use it on stage, you're kind of comfortable with it. That's a good plan, I would think.
And you know where it is. Everyone has a great time on set and off set and also in the audience.
Okay, some of the work is over. The season is in place and we can put the dates on our calendars. And now the real work, but also the real joy of amateur theater begins. Congratulations to the Red Barn Theater, everybody involved, as we look ahead to your 61st season. Thank you for being a part of our program.
And we appreciate very much having the support of you, because if people didn't know about us, they wouldn't be coming. So we are very appreciative.
Thank you, Connie.
Thank you.
Again, auditions are this Saturday. It begins at 9 a.m., and it's in the Fine Arts Building on the UW-Eau Claire Barron County campus in Rice Lake. Hey, good luck. This is Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. Thanks for being with us again this week. Please join us whenever you can. Every now and then, this being the now, we check in with those making things happen at the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson, the place that puts West in West Wisconsin, just across the river from Minnesota's East. Executive Director is Darby Lunsford. Visual Arts Director is Anastasia Sharton. Let's talk first to Darby. The importance of being earnest. I know that it's opened, but there are a trio of performances left. For the people who have not shown up yet and who need convincing that this is a great show, tell us about it. I love the cucumber sandwich description. That's a good start.
Yeah, the actors even eat cucumber sandwiches, so it's true to form in that sense. But yeah, it's in the Black Box, so it's a great intimate setting. In that space, a great kind of English drawing room comedy, really, really funny, really well directed and acted. The cast is just hysterical and lots of physical comedy. And, you know, it's one of those shows that is a classic that you may think you know it, you may not, but it's really fresh. It's really interesting and people really are liking it. Performances left this weekend, so hopefully everybody can come out and catch it.
Do you have an in-house theatrical group that puts these on, or who's producing this?
We do. It's part of our council structure, so we have five producing councils in different areas. Theater is one of those, and so this is essentially theater chosen and produced by the community for the community. Same thing with our visual arts side, which you can talk to Anastasia about. Same thing with music. So, yeah, we have an internal council that really helps steer what the programming is on the stage, and then the FIPS as an organization helps to produce it.
And you have two venues.
Yep. The John H. Potter Theater, which is our main theater, that has about 245 seats. The Black Box has about 125 seats for comparison.
Okay. The audience may hear me turning pages every once in a while, but that's because I have in front of me all the releases from the FIPS, and they are very good at sending those things out. And what we're going to do is clip back and forth between Darby and Anastasia to talk about all the stuff that's current at the FIPS. I should point out the importance of being earnest, of which we were just talking. It has a trio of performances left. They are this coming Friday the 4th, Saturday the 5th, and Sunday the 6th. Friday and Saturday shows are at 7:30, and Sunday is a 2 p.m. matinee. Okay, over to Anastasia. You have new galleries exhibitions in place now all the way through the end of February. Tell us about it. There's some interesting featured artists, and they are from places like Luck and Pepin and Buffalo, Minnesota, and Duluth, et cetera, et cetera. What's up?
We just opened a series of exhibitions in the galleries. They opened on the 21st of January, and they're up through the 27th of February. Lots of color. That's kind of the connective thread between all the different shows in the galleries. You know, we have six gallery spaces, so six artists, and a pair of artists showing as well. Gallery one is wall installations by Jody Reed, colorful discs in kind of clusters on the walls, so lots of color and movement. And then upstairs galleries, Miri Villard. Miri is the artist from Duluth that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. And she has an exhibition, a traveling exhibition of paintings, mixed media paintings, and also graphically designed panels that she's created. And that show is titled Doublethink, Rights of the Child. And we have a special event that we've organized in conjunction with that I can talk about later.
You bet.
And then in gallery three, photographs by Steve Johnson. Steve is from Hudson, and he happens to be a member of our Visual Arts Council as well, a really talented photographer. And his subject for this show are details of spray paint graffiti art that he's found throughout the city. So kind of abstracting those and again, just really brilliant colors and movement and shape. And he's named each piece after a classic jazz song. So it kind of has that energy to it in that show. And then in our Overlook Gallery is Carol Edelman, a collage artist. She's from Luck. You mentioned that. Mm-hmm. And then on our Riverview Gallery, Susan Davies made huge paintings with ink and other mixed media. She's from Buffalo, Minnesota. And then we have a really beautiful exhibition of pottery by Art Gannett and Barbara Anderson, who are with Little Plum Pottery in Pepin, Wisconsin. Huge vases, unbelievable that they were able to craft them. You know, down to then very delicate pieces as well. And again, all just in brilliant glazes. So if you're looking for some color and great energy, I think the galleries are a good place to visit this session.
Yeah, and color is good during the winter, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah, yes. As I'm looking out my window at the
yes.
White and gray.
Yeah. All right, mm-hmm. So let's continue on our chronological road. February 12th. Back to you, Darby. It looks like we're going to celebrate Valentine's Day in a very special way. What's coming to the Phipps and the Black Box Theater on that day?
Yeah, so that's one of our St. Croix Valley Opera Cabaret Nights. St. Croix Valley Opera is a newish organization that we've partnered with on these cabarets. They do the big opera at the River every year. You may be familiar with that. Mm-hmm. So, it's using our Black Box again, a small intimate space, two singers and a musician. And this time, because of Valentine's Day, it's entitled Moonlight and Love Songs, but really a great tribute to all the love songs. That's Amore, Falling in Love with Love, great stuff from that side of things. The first one sold out back in November, so seems to be really popular. We also do a third one in May called Broadway Baby.
Taking somebody to this, someone special, is better than a card or chocolates.
Exactly.
Don't you think? Yeah. It says the perfect date with your funny Valentine, a night out with friends, or even a solo excursion. And you said it, you'll be falling in love with love. That's February 12th at 7:30 p.m., St. Croix Valley Opera Cabaret Night, Moonlight and Love Songs. We're on the phone with Darby Lunsford, Executive Director at the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. Also, Anastasia Sharton, Visual Arts Director. And we're flipping over to Anastasia again because you alluded to the special event, the Rights of the Child Community Forum. That's coming up on the 19th. Tell us about that.
This event was, as I mentioned, inspired by Miri Villard's exhibition, the Doublethink, Rights of the Child. Part of her objective in creating and traveling that exhibition is to create conversations around the rights of the child, the status of children in society today. And so the Visual Arts Council took her up on that, and we have organized a community forum Saturday, the 19th of February, from 1 to 4 p.m. We're offering it both in person or Zoom. We received funding from the Wisconsin Humanities Council and also the Wisconsin Arts Board. It is an opportunity to hear Professor Moira Lynch, a professor at the University of Wisconsin River Falls in the Department of Politics, Geography, and International Studies. Mm-hmm. So she's going to be talking about kind of the origins and the history of human rights, giving a really broad perspective. And then we'll have the opportunity to hear from Miri Villard herself, more about kind of her insights into the research that she conducted while she was working on the exhibit, and for her to talk more deeply about kind of how she responded to what she had learned through her art, but then also about this notion of doublethink, or that cognitive dissonance, how we can kind of hold multiple viewpoints that might be contradictory and might be kind of negatively impacting change going forward. So I'm really looking forward to hearing both of them and kind of setting the stage then for the second half of the forum, which will be breakout sessions. People who've gathered in person will be divided up into groups and have an opportunity to talk more directly with one another, working with facilitators in those conversations. And then Zoom participants will go into breakout rooms in Zoom and have similar experiences that way. And then we'll all gather back together again for kind of a wrap up. We've got a great list of community partners. One of the things that is really exciting to me about this, the community partners will put materials out that people can gather, that will give people opportunities to kind of take action, sort of things that they can do. You know, after having learned about and talked about and kind of processed the aspects of these issues and different topics, then these groups will kind of offer some opportunities. So community partners like Big Brothers Big Sisters, CASA of St. Croix County, a new organization helping foster children in particular, a local church, the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, the Hudson Area Public Library, the Hudson Hospital Foundation, Hudson Inclusion Alliance, the Islamic Resource Group, Purple Tree, St. Croix Valley Food Bank, Sustain Hudson. That's pretty exciting to have partners. It's open to the public.
You bet. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you brought up that list, because I was going to mention that it's a very diverse panel. It's an important day, isn't it?
I have to admit, I'm really nervous about it. I think because it is ambitious to take on this topic. It's a little contentious. We're hoping that all of that comes out, that really people are open to being vulnerable, also open to really listening to others, and that we can make some connections and kind of move this conversation forward. But we'll embark on it in all good intentions.
I think you guys are to be congratulated. Let's jump back to Darby and talk about the Addams Family musical. That's coming at the end of February, and that is in the John H. Potter Theater.
Yeah, it is a musical. It's a children's theater company, juniors and seniors in high school performing the roles. Great family fun. You know, it is about that wonderfully weird family. It's definitely kooky and kind of strange, but this was a really popular Broadway musical. They've been rehearsing here and sound really great, and I've been watching some dance rehearsals too. It's a big, spectacular show and great sets, great costumes, and the kids just really do a fantastic job on it. And if you've never seen the show, whether it toured here or not, it's a really, really fun show.
Mm-hmm. Does it have the original theme song in it?
They build that into the overture. It's all original music when it was written for Broadway.
Okay. We don't have time to mention them all, but one of the other neat things at the FIPS relative to visual arts, you have lots of classes, art classes, dance and movement classes, music lessons, theater classes.
Mm-hmm. So our website is www.thefips.org. Go there and you can find all of our programming. Kind of amazing how much we have going on here. Lots of opportunities for people to be creative and to enjoy others' creativity.
Mm-hmm.
We're also, just wanted to add, we're working on summer art camp as well. We're bringing them back more full tilt than we were able to last year, but we'll be announcing those soon too.
I love talking about summer. Thank you for bringing that up. I appreciate it. The FIPS Center for the Arts in Hudson, always busy, always relevant. I don't have to ask you guys to keep in touch because you're very good at that. Thank you, Darby Lunsford, Executive Director, and Anastasia Sharton, Visual Arts Director. It's a wonderful place.
Thank you so much, Al.
Thanks, Al.
One more thing always going on at the FIPS, people like you helping to make it work as well as it does. There's a website link called Get Involved. So do it. TheFIPS.org. This is Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. Back in September, we talked with two West Wisconsin writers who were winners in the 2021 version of the Fiction and Poetry Contest presented by Wisconsin People and Ideas Magazine, a publication of the Wisconsin Academy of Sciences, Arts, and Letters. Now it's time for this year's competition. To get some background on his new position and details on how to enter, I talked the other day with editor Chris Chambers. Well, Wisconsin People and Ideas is the Academy's quarterly magazine of contemporary Wisconsin thought and culture, is the way it's described online. Chris, how often, obviously quarterly, but when is it published? What months?
Well, I just today sent our winter issue off to press, and that will be out in the middle of February.
Okay.
And then our spring issue comes out in April. Summer issue in July, and fall issue mid-October.
You have not been steering this ship for all that long, so I'm curious about how you feel about doing that for a publication that's inching up towards 70 years. So I was thinking to myself, you must feel quite a responsibility to something that's such a part of our fabric. Does a guy like you, who's relatively new in the driver's seat, have you gone through archives to see how the publication has evolved, or haven't you had time to do any of that yet?
No, absolutely. That was one of the first things I did, was I started going back through the back issues and just to get a sense of the history of the magazine and what we've been doing. It's a great honor for me to be taking the helm here. Jason Smith, the previous editor, did an amazing job with the magazine over the last 13 years. Mm-hmm. It's beautifully designed and printed. We've got a great layout guy in John Houston here in Madison. I've have the experience of stepping in and doing this kind of thing at a couple of other magazines. My role here, at least in the first year or so, is just to kind of keep things moving forward, keep everything running smoothly, not make any great changes, mm-hmm. because if it's not broken, don't fix it. Yeah, it's a really well done magazine.
I always like to say, if it's not broken, don't break it.
Just, oh, that's good advice, too.
Yeah, that's just me. So again, I like to quote things from official documents that I've read. And online it says, since 1954, the Wisconsin Academy has published a magazine for people who are curious about our world and proud of Wisconsin ideas. You told me that you're originally from Wisconsin, so you have an idea of what our ideas are. But you've spent some time out of state. So now that you've been back, tell me about your reaction to Wisconsin. Has it changed? Is it the magazine Wisconsin-only stuff, or is it literally the world?
No, it is a magazine of Wisconsin people and ideas. Okay. So we do focus on the people of Wisconsin. The Academy, our purview is the sciences, arts, and letters. And mm-hmm. so we cover those three areas broadly across the state. I look for Wisconsin writers for the articles, Wisconsin artists, Wisconsin photographers, and Wisconsin subjects. Coming back to the state after being away for so long, I don't know that the state has changed as much as I have. One of the interesting things for me is that I see the state in a little different light after having lived elsewhere, and realize before I left, I didn't quite appreciate what a unique place it is, a rich and diverse culture in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And that's become a lot much more clear to me since I came back.
Well, your position sort of mirrors mine, and I all the time am extolling the virtues of doing what I do being so easy. In my neck of the woods, in western and northwestern Wisconsin, a wonderful and vast array of resources from the artistic music and art and poetry and writing. And you have the entire state, and I think that might be where you found pleasant surprises. You just weren't aware of how many wonderfully artistic people there are in this state.
Absolutely. And also how many wonderfully interesting and diverse corners there are in the state and different regions.
Sure.
And the differences between those regions. One of the features we have in the magazine is called Wisconsin Table, an article in each issue about a particular food item or food-related story based in Wisconsin. And that's one of the things I'm really excited about. The issue coming out right now has a feature on Landjager, which is a kind of fermented sausage common down in Greene and Dane counties. And I had never heard of it until I got pitched this story. And then the spring issue, we're doing a story on Booyah, which I also hadn't heard of, chicken-based stew from up around Green Bay.
As editor, do you have to partake before you publish?
I don't, but one of the things I'm asking the writers to do is to provide a recipe along with the story. You know, if people read the story and want to give it a try, they'll be able to do that.
On the phone with Chris Chambers, he's editor of Wisconsin People and Ideas, the quarterly publication of the Wisconsin Academy of Sciences, Arts, and Letters. We've been getting to know the magazine, and we're going to talk about the fiction and poetry contest in just a second. But I wanted to point out that your current issue included a guy from our neck of the woods, Nicholas Butler, did an article about, well, what did he do?
Yeah, he did an article on a guy named Doug Duren, who's a farmer and environmentalist in the Driftless area. A great article, and I'm familiar with Nick's short stories and novels, and thrilled to see a writer of his stature in the magazine.
Me too. We love him around here. And your book review in that issue was all about his current book, Godspeed. That's got to be one of the fun parts, and maybe that's a question. Uncovering people in little corners of the state, that's got to be fun.
It is. It's one of the things I really enjoy about the magazine. I'm hoping to do more actual traveling around the state in the coming months. So far, most of my connections with people have been virtual.
Okay. You have a fiction and poetry contest. The submission portal, as it's called, is now open until the 15th of March. You announce the winners in the summer issue, fall issue, what?
The winners will be announced mid-summer. First place in each category receives $500 and a reading at the Wisconsin Book Festival in Madison and a one-week residency at Shake Rag Alley Center for the Arts in Mineral Point. The winners are published in the fall issue. In the winter issue, we publish second place fiction and honorable mention poems. And then the spring issue is third place story and the rest of the honorable mention poems. The fiction and poetry contest covers the majority of the fiction and poetry that we publish in the magazine. That's the letters part of our arts and letters.
And your awards started about 40 years after the inception of the magazine itself, so in 1994, recognizing Wisconsin writers and poets. People are saying, come on, you guys, get to how we can enter. So tell people how they can enter their work.
You'll find the portal on our website, wisconsinacademy.org. To go to the writing contest page, there are instructions for entering your work. All the entries are judged blindly, no identification on the work. We judge the poems and stories based on their own merit. We have screeners, published writers, and editors who are doing the screening. And then 10 finalists are sent on to our final judges who select the actual winners.
And the news release I'm looking at has the Wisconsin Public Radio logo on it. So I have a feeling we are a little bit involved in this.
Yes. WPR is one of our partners in sponsoring the contest, as well as the Wisconsin Book Festival, Shake Rag Alley Center for the Arts. And we have a new sponsor this year, 1016 Press.
Cool. We're talking about Wisconsin People and Ideas, the magazine of the Wisconsin Academy of Sciences, Arts, and Letters, and their contest for fiction and poetry. It's open now through the 15th of March. Gather up your stuff and enter. Don't be shy. It's better than you think. We should mention, Chris, while we have you, that you have courses in creative writing and also in visual arts.
That's correct. This is a new program. That's how I first got involved at the Academy, was to help develop these. These are non-credit personal development courses. We actually offer them in creative writing and in visual arts. Right now, they're all online. We're hoping eventually to be able to offer them in person and around the state as well as in Madison. One of the good things about them being online now, of course, is that anyone anywhere in the state can take these courses. The courses actually begin the middle of March, so just as the contest is ending. And we have classes on memoir writing, mystery writing with a Wisconsin mystery novelist, Sean Harris. We have a couple of poetry courses, also some really interesting art classes, scientific illustration, comics class. I have a class on cell phone photography.
Hmm.
A lot to choose from. Most of these courses are also in the evening. You know, even those of us who are still working can participate.
Good deal. The way to sign up today and the way to access the magazine and the academy and all of your resources is your website. Lay it on us again one more time.
WisconsinAcademy.org.
Chris Chambers, you're still new enough in the hot seat to wish you good luck. Thank you for taking time. This was kind of a hastily put together chat, and I appreciate you being flexible. I have a feeling you and I are going to talk again. All the best in your tenure, and again, thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you, Al, and all the best to all the writers out there. Take care.
Did somebody say Mabel Tainter? I see here on my sheet of paper that Tim Harmston and Mary Mack appear at the Mabel Tainter this Saturday, the day before the Drifters, 7 p.m. Good for them. Well, my Spectrum West experience changed on March 12th of 2009. I went from being just a listener to a host, although listening will always be a big part of what I need to do. Today marks the 600th time I've turned on this microphone, introducing guests with stories to tell and things on their plates. I thought we might hit the refresh button today. No one knows history and potential better than Dean Kallenbach, who until last April served as senior West Wisconsin regional manager. First, in our conversation, I was curious about what retirement can look like. You see, he now supervises chickens and bees in place of humans. How are the chickens?
Doing well. Got 4 eggs yesterday. They molted in the late fall, and we went down to 0 eggs for about 6 weeks, but starting to come back a little bit now. I had to have the rooster in the house for a couple of days because his comb got frostbite. My wife made him a hat. He didn't like it.
That must have been tough having 2 roosters in the house.
Oh, I think he outranks me.
What do bees do in the wintertime?
Well, they got a little cluster in the hive. They keep the queen at 90 degrees throughout the winter if they're doing their job.
How do they do that?
They just encircle her, you know, then in layers. And the winter worker bees are configured a little differently than the summer worker bees. The summer bees only live about 6 weeks, and the winter bees make it through the whole winter, and they have the ability to detach. This isn't the correct terminology, but the way it makes sense to me is they can detach their elbows from their wings and vibrate their elbows to create heat.
Wow.
The bees on the outside go and get something to eat and then work their way back to the middle, and then they just keep swapping places. But they have to keep the queen at 90, and that's their job in the winter. And they bring her some food, too.
How do they know it's 90? There's a good question.
I don't know.
What a dilemma, though. Do I want to be a summer bee or a winter bee? You know, am I going to live a shorter amount of time but really party? Or am I going to live longer but then come summer when it's cool and I can fly around? I'm out of here.
Yeah. Some of the people I've heard say that the reason the summer bees don't last as long is simply because they work themselves to death. They're just flying so much that they just can't fly anymore. And then that's kind of the end of them.
Well, now I feel bad.
No, it's what they do.
Yeah.
Who they are.
Guys like you, thank you for keeping it up because, of course, bees are in the spotlight. We need them.
I made it through the winter last winter for the first time, and I kept that strain going. I'm hoping I can do it again. We'll see what happens.
Bees and chickens, were those part of your retirement plan?
Not 10 years ago, but more recently, yeah,
okay.
I guess.
That's fascinating stuff. I don't have those kinds of plans. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't think
actually,
I would have the... Does it take patience to do those?
You know, I compare it to dairy farming, and it's pretty simple compared to dairy farming. It's little spurts of activity surrounded by, you know, lots of just ignoring. It's not a real hard work.
One final question that just prompted one. Dairy farmers, they have to do the same thing every day. They got to milk cows twice a day. Is there one thing that you have to do every day that you can't get out of?
Like in the winter, if it's really cold, we don't open up the coop. And then they have a little enclosed run that's secure. Mm-hmm. And so I've got the run covered with plastic for the winter. They like it in there fine. And it's got straw and hay and stuff that they can pick around in.
Oh, good.
Normally, the main thing is to close them in for the night to keep weasels or fox or something out of the coop. My neighbors are willing to do that if I want to go out of town for a few days. So they enjoy them, and we're fortunate that way.
That's Dean Kallenbeck's retirement. So we're talking about regional programming and specifically Spectrum West, or SWEST as I've come to call it. I'd like you to, even though you are retired, you don't have to do this, but you are so nice that you're willing to, talk a bit about the history of regional programs, because you are well aware of my opinion, and I think you share it as well, that programs originating in the regions are where WPR literally gets out for a meet and greet. Without regional programs, I think WPR would be somewhat homogenized in a one-size-fits-all proposition, whereas each region of the state has its own flavor, its own characters, its own personalities, and I've always felt it's kind of WPR's responsibility to engage, not only from the big podium in Madison, kind of a soapbox on my part, and I got away from that original question, the history of regional programs. The first programs, were you around when they held meetings and said, we have to have these, or have they been around long before you got in?
I was the first programming employee for Wisconsin Public Radio in 1986. I was hired to do the morning show. In those days, it was just morning edition on all the stations in northwestern Wisconsin. I was doing newscasts in the morning and local weather and local sports. Eventually, we evolved away from that. We continued to have morning hosts for quite a long time. In fact, you were initially hired in that role as well to do local weather and local announcements, that sort of thing. But the newscasting got managed instead in Madison. The feeling was that that was a better use of our resources. But in the early 90s, I became the regional manager. And part of our job as regional managers was to find ways to sort of put the skin on Wisconsin Public Radio for our regions, for our communities. You know, one of the ways to do that, of course, is to do specific programming for the region. There was a fellow by the name of Eric Wheeler who was volunteering to do a program on the student station WUEC at UW-Eau Claire, posting folk music, and he did a nice job of it. He was a regular volunteer for WPR. He was a big supporter for WPR as well. And he approached me with the idea of doing a show. I said, well, instead of a folk music show, why don't we do a broad arts program? Let's do something where we can talk to artists, authors, poets, musicians from the area or who are coming to the area. And that's kind of where Spectrum West was born. So Eric was the original host. The program is a little different than it was then as far as how it's built. The various hosts through the years have done different things with it. But the basic mission of letting our audience know what's happening in the arts in Western Wisconsin, that really hasn't changed.
Let's name the other hosts who have been in the hot seat.
Yeah, Eric opened it up. And then Jack Beaver was our second host, where Eric was more interested in the folk music. Jack was a poet. He got very interested in Spectrum West working in that area, and then he became the host for several years. Then Kathy Stahl started volunteering for the program, and Jack dropped out, and Kathy took over and did a really nice job expanding the scope of the program, getting into some of the humanities that weren't as prevalent earlier on. And then, of course, you took over, and we've had several people who've helped as contributors through the years, people like Alan Jenkins and Deborah Finstead and the late Lori Beasy, and, of course, Jim Oliver more recently. Mm-hmm. So there have been a lot of great contributors to the program through the years who have helped us out.
I know Chris McCallum did a lot of visual art.
Yeah, that was her focus.
What about Spectrum West in the pecking order? Were there other regional shows up and running at the time, or was this a pioneer of sorts?
If I remember correctly, it was pretty much the only one at the time. We started others like the West Side and Route 51. The West Side was the next one, really. That started in 2002. There were some other regional programming having to do with gardening and that sort of thing that started in the late 90s over in Wausau, for instance. But I think Spectrum West was really the first specifically for this region.
Mm-hmm. How many regions?
Seven right now.
Seven?
Including the headquarters in Madison.
Can you name them?
I think I still can.
this is a quiz, by the way, as a retirement quiz. Yeah.
Southeast region in Milwaukee, the Northwest region based in Green Bay and Appleton.
Northeast,
yeah. The North Central region based in Wausau, and then the Southwest region based in La Crosse, as well as the Northern region based in Superior, and then, of course, the West Central region based in Eau Claire.
Do they all have a regional or regional shows?
No. Superior, Wausau, La Crosse, and Eau Claire have regional spoken word programming. Green Bay does have some locally produced music programming, including a program for the Native American community in northeastern Wisconsin. But currently, we don't have local programming in either southeastern Wisconsin or in south central Wisconsin, where our Madison headquarters is.
You recognize the voice, Dean Kallenbach, Senior Regional Manager Emeritus. I don't know if we can use that term or not. I don't know if that's just an educational thing, but man, he taught people a lot over the years, so I'm going to use it anyway. He's the retired senior regional manager for Western Wisconsin, and we are here on the occasion of Spectrum West's, my Spectrum West's 600th program. It's a fun place to be. Am I right that Spectrum West is rather unique? There are not many arts, culture, / humanities centered shows around the state?
This is the only one that focuses on regional arts and culture specifically. Now, we don't have a program that does that statewide either, although many of our programs touch on those sorts of things in just the general talk area. But yeah, it's one of its kind, and I think it served our community well.
The thing that I've been most fascinated with and that actually makes my job relatively easy is the abundance of people and things they do that fall into the art and music and literature categories that we swim around in each week. It's like, for me, several Amazon boxes on my doorstep each week. I mean, topics and events are just almost delivered. Again, that makes my job easy. You're not making decisions anymore. Well, maybe you are on your own, but we do trust your perspective greatly. The future of regional programming on WPR. I mean, in a day and age of programming coming at us from every angle and every device, where do these temperature-taking shows stand, do you think? WPR committed, as always, to the meet and greet, as I defined it earlier?
I think so. I mean, there are a lot of changes happening in management at WPR right now. The person who used to be my boss has left. The person who was his boss suffered a fatal motorcycle accident last summer. So there's a lot of interiming going on in Wisconsin Public Radio. My old position has yet to be filled, local regional manager position as well. So there's a lot of flux going on right now, which local staff I know is doing a great job just working through it. And we've got bases covered, but those sorts of long-term philosophical conversations, you know, are things that are going to be important to have over the next year or two. The one thing that radio people understand is that local is important. You know, local can be defined in a number of ways, but the stations are licensed to serve communities. Our stations in Western Wisconsin are specifically licensed to serve River Falls, Eau Claire, and Menominee. Obviously, we serve a broader region than that. And so, you know, I think that's always going to be something that sets radio apart, is our ability to do local, do it quickly, do it well. And the public radio way to do it is just go beyond the surface skimming of hey, this person's coming to town, let's interview them. But instead, let's talk about why the arts are important in our community and how the arts are done and all the great things you do in your interviews. Get people to really elaborate on not only their craft, but you help me understand as a listener why it's important to me. And I think that's a great part of the program. And that's just good radio that I think is going to translate no matter who is in the boss's chair down the line.
Thank you. One of the unique aspects of Wisconsin Public Radio is, of course, our middle name, Public. And I have always thought and continue to think the WPR listeners really do feel that they have and want a stake in it. They feel kind of like investors. How much input do listeners have? WPR has always been, and should, in my opinion, continue to be, listener-driven. How do we gauge? Well, how do people engage? That's a better question.
Well, you know, you and I both in our histories have worked in commercial broadcasting. We understand the bottom line there is advertisers. Are we pleasing the advertisers? I love commercial radio. I listen to a lot of it. But one of the reasons I love public radio is we serve the listener. That's our main target. We do a lot of research that tells us about who's listening and when when they're listening and that sort of thing. That's all very useful. But I know that we've also funded through the years other specific research targeting our listeners, potential listeners, and trying to find out what it is that they need. But I think it's still a practice. Every call that comes in gets noted, and everybody in the organization gets an email once a week that shows what people have to say. And so if people are concerned about something or don't like something they heard, or hopefully they call when they like something they've heard as well, and we do get a lot of that. I just know from being in senior management for the past 15 years, that's really a focus. That's not just words. What can we do that's going to serve as many listeners as possible in as deep a way as possible, in a way that they can't get in another fashion?
Dean Kallenbach, thanks for sticking your head out of retirement for a few minutes. I appreciate that. Continue to enjoy it. I will continue to use you as a mentor and a resource because you're priceless that way. Thanks so much.
Hey, thanks, and I'll keep listening. Congratulations on the 600th.
How about a couple Spectrum memos? Don't forget the big snow sculpture contest. That's coming up Saturday, this Saturday, the 5th, Wakanda Park in Menominee. The Fall Creek Public Library, or Fall Creek, as some folks say, presents author Michael Perry Thursday, February 17th, 7 p.m. at Fall Creek Village Hall. It's free. It's open to you, the public, and me. Registration is required, though, so register online or give them a call at 877-3334. Well, we're putting together a humdinger of a show for next week. In the meantime, keep in touch via spectrumwest@wpr.org. Next week, we'll talk about another new CD release from a musician in our midst and a gentleman who helps produce a lot of it. Special events, concerts coming up at UW River Falls and more. Thanks, Rick. Thanks, Kate. Thank you for being a part of this. Maybe 600 more. I don't know. Yeah, we'll see.